Today is Tuesday, the 23rd of September, and you are listening to the World Socialist Website. Trump turns Kirk Memorial into Campaign for Theocratic Fascist Dictatorship by Patrick Martin. 3 days ago, the Socialist Equality Party wrote in a statement calling for the mobilization of the working class against the Trump administration, quote, "It is necessary to put aside all self-deluding hopes that what is unfolding is anything less than a drive to establish a presidential dictatorship based on the military, police, paramilitary forces, and fascist gangs. The essential purpose of the glorification of Charlie Kirk has been to provide a martyr symbol to galvanize the most reactionary forces in the country." End quote. This fact was on full display at the funeral rally held for Kirk in Glendale, Arizona, on Sunday. What unfolded was something unprecedented in American history, a mobilization of the fascist right organized from the highest levels of the White House. The festival of reaction culminated in remarks from Trump. In the course of a violent rant, Trump proclaimed, "I hate my enemies," an extraordinary declaration from an American president about his domestic political opponents. This remark is particularly ominous, coming from a president whose enemies list includes anyone in the country who rejects his policies. Trump claimed that Kirk's last words to him were an appeal to send the military into Chicago on the pretext of saving the city from crime, and he promised to do so. He pledged to step up his campaign of military violence against the American people, focused on the major cities, while repeating the lie that, quote, "violence comes largely from the left," end quote. The day after the funeral, Trump signed an official order declaring Antifa a domestic terrorist organization. Given that Antifa is not in fact an actual organization, the order creates the basis for left-wing opponents of fascism to be persecuted using the methods of the war on terror. Trump closed his remarks with a pledge, quote, "to bring back religion to America, because without borders, law and order, and religion, you really don't have a country anymore," end quote. The slogan of fascist Italy was more concise, Dio Patria Famiglia. Any pretense of a separation of church and state was completely obliterated at the Arizona rally. References to Kirk as a modern-day Jesus Christ were ubiquitous. War Secretary Pete Hegseth declared, "Only Christ is King." Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. drew the bluntest parallel, quote, "Christ died at 33 years old, but he changed the trajectory of history. Charlie died at 31 years old, but he also now has changed the trajectory of history," end quote. Open calls for Christian theocracy came from fascist podcaster Benny Johnson, who pointed to Trump officials in attendance and declared, quote, "God has instituted them. God has given them power over our nation and our land," end quote. This was combined with calls for vengeance. Perhaps the most strident declaration came from Stephen Miller, the White House Deputy Chief of Staff and principal figure behind the construction of a presidential dictatorship. Trump's version of Joseph Goebbels howled at the administration's opponents, quote, "What do you have? You have nothing. You are nothing. You are wickedness. You are jealousy. You are hatred. You are nothing. You can build nothing. You can produce nothing. You can create nothing. We are the ones who build. We are the ones who create. We are the ones who lift up humanity," end quote. Miller paraphrased a tribute given by Goebbels in 1932 to the Nazi stormtrooper Horst Wessel, titled, "The Storm is Coming." Miller declared, quote, "We are the storm, and our enemies cannot comprehend our strength," end quote. Here, Miller is giving voice to the self-delusion of the capitalist financial oligarchy, the billionaires who imagine that they, and not the working class, are the driving force of human progress. But it is human labour, armed with science and technology, that creates the possibility of a new world of freedom and prosperity for all. The profit-gouging capitalist class offers humanity only deepening mass misery, dictatorship, and world war. The statement that fascism will come to America, quote, wrapped in the American flag and carrying a cross, end quote, has frequently been attributed to Sinclair Lewis, although he did not use those exact words in his great dystopian novel, It Can't Happen Here. The Kirk funeral rally showed the prescience of Lewis's depiction of the rise of an American fascist strongman who combines religious invocations and promises of centuries of American domination of the world. What Trump, Vance, Miller and co. offer is Hitler's thousand-year Reich, done up in red, white and blue. As extraordinary as the rally itself was, perhaps even more significant is the response, or non-response, of the media and the Democratic Party. The American press has treated Sunday's spectacle as if it were a routine political event. In their coverage, words like fascist, racist or anti-Semite are carefully avoided, not only in describing Charlie Kirk, but also in the lineup of fascists, racists and anti-Semites who spoke in his honour. More than 24 hours later, neither the New York Times nor the Washington Post has published editorials on the rally. In the face of 4 hours of Nazi-inspired diatribes, no leading Democrats, including Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, could muster even a perfunctory criticism. Quote, Democrats silent, as Republicans galvanized after Charlie Kirk Memorial, end quote. The Guardian headlined an article published yesterday. Explaining this silence, The Guardian commented, quote, Democrats trod carefully in responding to the memorial service, aware that any hint of criticism might be misconstrued and exploited, end quote. The newspaper cited comments by historian John Meacham that the Democrats risked being accused of being, quote, out of touch with America's Christian heartland, as the newspaper put it. That is, the Democrats rationalise their silence by hiding behind the fiction that exposing the attempt to erect a theocratic fascist dictatorship would be unpopular. In reality, the agenda laid out in Arizona is opposed by the vast majority of the population. There is a significant element of cowardice in the non-response to the Arizona rally, along with the previous decision by the Democrats to back the resolution honouring the fascist Kirk. But the more fundamental issue is that the Democrats are terrified of a movement from below, because any such movement would inevitably raise the question of who should rule society, the capitalist oligarchy, or the broad mass of working people. The turn toward authoritarian rule is taking place under conditions in which the social position of workers is rapidly deteriorating, wages eroded by inflation, families drowning in debt, public health and education dismantled, and an unending wave of workplace deaths. The ruling elite, terrified of mass resistance, is preparing to crush it in advance. This is not a crisis unique to America. The same conditions exist, to one degree or another, in every major capitalist country. In France, for example, a modest proposal for a 2% wealth tax on fortunes exceeding 100 million euros has provoked howls of outrage from billionaires like Bernard Arnault of LVMH, who denounced it as insane and communist. French capitalists, like their American counterparts, view even the smallest encroachment on their property as an existential threat. The same dynamic is at play in the United States. Once mass opposition develops, the conflict will not remain within the bounds of parliamentary debate, but will immediately threaten the wealth and power of the ruling elite. It is the capitalist system, not the personality of Donald Trump, which is the driving force in the effort to create an authoritarian regime. The only serious question in American politics today is how this movement toward dictatorship can be stopped. It will not come about through the Democratic Party, Congress, or the courts, all institutions which have already demonstrated their impotence or complicity. The necessary response is the emergence of a mass movement of the working class, mobilized independently, conscious of the scale of the threat, and prepared to fight not only against Trump, but against the capitalist system that has produced him. Escalation in the Baltics. NATO exploits alleged airspace violation by Russian jets for new war escalation by Johannes Stern. Last Friday, the Estonian Defence Ministry reported that three Russian MiG-31 fighter jets had entered Estonian airspace for several minutes. While the government in Tallinn and NATO allies immediately branded the incident a provocation by Moscow, the Kremlin firmly rejected this account. According to the Russian Defence Ministry, there had been no border violation. The aircraft were on a transfer flight from a base in northwestern Russia to the Kaliningrad exclave and had been flying, quote, in strict conformity with international rules governing airspace, with no violation of the borders of other states, as is confirmed by independent checks, end quote. In fact, even the map published by the Estonian military indicates that the jets flew parallel to the border and were on a transit route. Nevertheless, the incident is being exaggerated by European governments and the mainstream media to further escalate the confrontation with Russia. Today, Tuesday, the NATO Council is meeting at Estonia's request under Article 4 of the North Atlantic Treaty. These consultations are convened when a member state feels its security is threatened. In the 76-year history of the alliance, this mechanism has only rarely been invoked, most recently just a few days ago by Poland after more than 20 Russian drones crossed its airspace. That there are now two such meetings within 1 week is a clear expression of the acute situation. Article 4 is regarded as a precursor to Article 5, which provides for the alliance case and thus the entry into war of all NATO states. Already on Monday, representatives of the Western powers used the incident at the UN Security Council to issue martial threats. New US Ambassador Mike Waltz declared, quote, "The United States and its allies will defend every inch of NATO territory," end quote. In Germany and other NATO states, politicians are outbidding each other with aggressive demands. CDU foreign policy spokesman Jürgen Hart demanded a clear stop sign for Moscow. "Every military border violation must be, quote, answered with military means, even up to the shooting down of Russian fighter jets over NATO territory," end quote. Similar tones came from Lithuanian Defence Minister Davail Sakalien and Czech President Petr Pavel. The Greens are pushing for a coordinated European strategy. Quote, "Europe needs unity on when and how to respond step by step if something like this happens again," said security policy spokeswoman Sarah Nanny. SPD politicians are calling for restraint, but at the same time demanding a massive expansion of air defence. Siimce Molla, deputy parliamentary group chair, warned that existing military capabilities were insufficient to effectively protect the eastern flank. With such war propaganda and anti-Russia agitation, the population is to be gradually accustomed to the idea that the shooting down of Russian aircraft in European airspace, and thus a direct entry into the war, is an option. NATO has already taken concrete measures. With Operation Eastern Sentry, the alliance is strengthening its presence in the air, at sea, and on land, along the eastern flank. Italian F-35 jets carried out the interception of the Russian MiG-31s on Friday. Germany has stationed a second quick reaction alert unit in Rostock, Lahr. France has deployed Rafale fighters to Poland, and Denmark has sent a frigate. Since the Baltic states have no air forces of their own, so-called NATO air policing has been carried out for years by rotating members. It is now to be transformed into a comprehensive integrated defence system. NATO Supreme Commander Alexis Greenkiewicz stated that the goal was to, quote, "close gaps in our defence against a concrete threat," end quote. Germany is playing a key role in the escalation. Inspector General Carsten Brewer announced that the Bundeswehr would make so-called loitering munitions, kamikaze drones, operational by the end of this year. Quote, "In the end, it will have to come down to drones being used against drones," he declared. He is vigorously pushing the rearmament for a future drone war. At the same time, the Bundeswehr is preparing for a scenario that would massively increase mass casualties at the front in Ukraine and recall the bloody battles of the World Wars. Surgeon General Ralph Hoffmann told Reuters that in the event of a war with Russia, Germany would have to expect up to 1,000 wounded soldiers per day. The medical service is being massively expanded. Hospital trains and buses are being prepared, and German hospitals are to keep 15,000 beds available for soldiers. These statements alone make clear how concrete the war preparations already are. Berlin's aggressive role is tied to a long and criminal tradition. Already in the First and Second World Wars, control over Ukraine and the conquest of Russia played a central role in the expansion plans of German imperialism. Today, this predatory strategy is being repeated, which, with Hitler's war of extermination against the Soviet Union, led to some of the greatest crimes in human history, now under the guise of defense and democracy. Russia's invasion of Ukraine is reactionary and nationalist, but it does not change the fact that NATO systematically provoked the conflict through eastward expansion after 1991, the encirclement of Moscow with military bases, the US and EU-backed coup in Kiev in 2014, and the transformation of Ukraine into a NATO outpost. Since then, the Western powers have continuously driven escalation forward. European escalation policy is also a reaction to the geostrategic reorientation of the United States. After the Trump-Putin summit in Alaska, much points to Washington seeking a deal with Moscow over resources in order to concentrate its forces on confrontation with China. Europe, meanwhile, is to bear the main burden of the war against Russia. This increases the drive among the leading EU powers, above all Germany, to act militarily more independently and to ramp up arms production on a historic scale. The new budget, currently under debate in the Bundestag, already foresees military spending of 128 billion euros for the coming year. By 2029, it is to rise to 153 billion euros and then be financed exclusively from the regular budget. With the war credits of 1 trillion euros, supported by all Bundestag parties, including the Left Party and the Greens, the entire country is to be made fit for war. While the ruling class seeks to enforce its imperialist interests through fascism and war, resistance is growing in the working class. In France, hundreds of thousands demonstrated and went on strike against Macron's war and austerity budget last week. In Italy, on Monday, also hundreds of thousands took to the streets against Israel's genocide in Gaza. Workers sense that war policy is inseparably linked to social cuts, dictatorship, and fascism. The enormous armaments expenditures are being paid for directly through cuts to healthcare, education, pensions, and wages. The latest incidents, alleged airspace violations by drones or fighter jets, are being deliberately instrumentalized by NATO to drive escalation forward. With the second Article 4 consultation within just a few days and the debate about shooting down Russian jets, Europe stands on the brink of a direct military confrontation between NATO and Russia, a scenario that could inevitably lead to a nuclear world war. The working class must not stand idly by in the face of this madness. The fight against war, militarism, and austerity requires a building of an international socialist movement that overthrows the imperialist governments and reorganizes society on the basis of social equality and international solidarity. Only in this way can the looming catastrophe be averted. Trump and Kennedy launch unhinged anti-science tirade in autism press conference by Evan Blake. President Donald Trump conducted a White House press conference on Monday that stands as the most sweeping assault on science and public health by any sitting president, perhaps only matched by Trump's infamous April 2020 coronavirus briefing, where he encouraged Americans to inject disinfectant and use ultraviolet light inside their bodies. This latest spectacle represents a dangerous escalation in the Trump administration's broader war against science, medicine, and healthcare policy. The parallels to Trump's 2020 disinfectant debacle are unmistakable. As the World Socialist website observed in an April 2020 perspective, Rasputin in the White House, that press conference revealed, quote, the elevation of an especially despicable and even depraved personality to a high position in the state, a characteristic of doomed political systems throughout history. Just as Trump's bleach recommendations exposed the oligarchy's complete indifference to human life in service of reopening the economy at the height of the pandemic, Monday's autism announcement reveals the administration's willingness to terrorize pregnant women and families with autistic children to advance their broader anti-science agenda. Throughout the hour-long briefing, Trump demonstrated disturbing signs of neurological decline, repeating variations of the phrases, don't take Tylenol, don't give Tylenol to your child after it's born, and separate the vaccines, literally dozens of times in an unhinged, repetitive pattern that suggested possible dementia or other neurological degeneration. His rambling, often incoherent statements included this verbatim declaration, quote, let's do it now. Nothing bad can happen. It can only good happen. But with Tylenol, don't take it. Don't take it. And if you can't live, if your fever is so bad, you have to take one, because there's no alternative to that, sadly. First question, what can you take instead? It's actually, there's not an alternative to that. As you know, other of the medicines are absolutely proven bad. I mean, they've been proven bad with the aspirins and the Advils and the others, right? And they've been proven bad, end quote. At the center of Monday's press conference were several demonstrably false and dangerous claims that contradict decades of established medical science. Trump declared that taking Tylenol is not good and announced that the FDA would notify physicians that, quote, the use of acetaminophen during pregnancy can be associated with a very increased risk of autism, end quote. This assertion flies in the face of extensive research, including a major 2024 Swedish study of nearly 2.5 million children that found no connection between prenatal acetaminophen use and neurodevelopmental disorders. Regarding pregnant women with fevers, Trump repeatedly insisted, quote, there's no downside, you just have to tough it out, end quote. In doing so, Trump deliberately minimized the well-documented risks of maternal hypothermia, which has been linked to neural tube defects, congenital heart defects, and other serious birth defects when fever occurs during critical developmental periods. The medical community has responded with immediate alarm to Trump's unsubstantiated claims. Arthur Kaplan, the founding head of the Division of Medical Ethics at NYU Grossman School of Medicine, told the New York Times reporter Christina Jewett, quote, the announcement on autism was the saddest display of a lack of evidence, rumours, recycling old myths, lousy advice, outright lies, and dangerous advice I have ever witnessed by anyone in authority in the world claiming to know anything about science, end quote. Trump launched into a characteristic rant about childhood vaccinations, claiming children, quote, get these massive vaccines like you'd give to a horse, end quote, and asserting they contain, quote, sometimes 80 different vaccines in them, end quote. This grotesque exaggeration, the CDC actually recommends 12 vaccines from birth through age 6, reveals the administration's fundamental hostility to proven public health measures. Trump's repeated claims that there's no downside to spacing vaccines over 5 years ignores compelling evidence that delayed vaccination schedules leave children vulnerable to preventable diseases for extended periods and significantly increase the risk of remaining undervaccinated. Trump suggested delaying the hepatitis B vaccine until age 12, ignorantly stating, quote, I would wait until the baby is 12 years old to give them hepatitis B, end quote, forgetting even to say vaccine. This recommendation would reverse over 3 decades of successful public health policy that has virtually eliminated hepatitis B among American children, reducing cases by 99% from 1990 to 2022. Trump, Health Secretary Kennedy, and FDA head Marty Makary all promoted the long-debunked claim that the Amish community has no autism because they do not vaccinate. When asked whether improved diagnostics can explain rising autism rates, Kennedy dismissed this scientific consensus as, quote, one of the canards that has been promoted by the industry for many years, end quote. There is overwhelming evidence from researchers that expanded diagnostic criteria, increased awareness, and better screening methods account for most of the observed increase in autism diagnoses in recent decades. In one of his most bizarre moments, Trump claimed, quote, we learned some pretty good things about certain elements of genius that can be given to a baby, and the baby can get better, and in some cases, maybe substantially better, end quote. Under the guise of a medical breakthrough, the White House rolled out this genius cure for autism, leucovorin, with the trappings of a patent medicine show, flanked by some of the most notorious hucksters and snake oil salesmen in American public life. Dr. Mehmet Oz, whose television empire and supplement ventures made millions by pitching unproven remedies and gimmick diagnostics, embodied the crass commercialism underlying the event. It is entirely plausible, indeed likely, that officials sharing that podium could directly profit from the hype and regulatory manoeuvres surrounding this product line, given their histories of monetizing wellness claims, book and media brands, and litigation profiteering. In reality, leucovorin is a decades-old cancer drug typically used to protect patients from methotrexate toxicity during chemotherapy that has now been cynically repackaged as an autism cure with virtually no supporting evidence. As noted by epidemiologist Dr. Ellie Murray in her Substack, the entire research foundation for this supposed breakthrough consists of 9 small trials registered in the federal database, almost all conducted by the same group of researchers at the University of Arkansas. Of these 9 studies, most remain incomplete or failed entirely, with one terminated because researchers could not enroll a single patient. The sole completed trial with published results tested just 12 children over a mere 2 weeks and found no meaningful improvement in any measures of autism symptoms, behavior, or quality of life. The study was so poorly executed that it recruited only 12 of a planned 40 participants, yet this scientific failure now serves as the foundation for a presidential proclamation of an autism cure. This mirrors previous episodes of autism quackery, such as David Geyer's administration of Lupron, a chemical castration drug to autistic children based on equally fraudulent theories about mercury and testosterone. Leucovorin has become the hydroxychloroquine for autism, a desperate president's miracle cure unsupported by evidence, promoted by the same cast of hucksters who profit from fear and desperation. Monday's announcement must be understood within the broader context of Kennedy's systematic dismantling of vaccine policy through his control of the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, ACIP. After Kennedy removed all 17 sitting ACIP members and replaced them with vaccine skeptics and conspiracy theorists, last week the panel voted to restrict the MMRV vaccine for children under 4. Cast doubt on the importance of COVID vaccines for younger people, and has been working to delay hepatitis B shots given at birth. Significantly, Trump declared, quote, they'll say it later, but I'm going to say it now, end quote, in reference to the official recommendations from HHS agencies and ACIP. In effect, Trump was stating that Kennedy's committee had not yet provided him with the pseudo-scientific justification for his most extreme positions, but he nevertheless would issue these dangerous pronouncements. These attacks on science and public health cannot be divorced from the broader fascistic trajectory of the Trump administration. The oligarchy's embrace of anti-science positions reflects their understanding that genuine public health measures conflict with their class interests. The elimination of vaccine protections, the terrorizing of pregnant women with false medical claims, and the promotion of dangerous quackery all serve the oligarchy's broader agenda of increasing mortality rates and reducing healthcare costs. Monday's press conference represents not merely a return to Trump's prior medical quackery, but a deepening of what can only be characterized as a policy of deliberate social murder that has developed throughout the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. The working class must understand that the most basic defense of science and public health requires nothing less than the overthrow of the capitalist system that has elevated such figures to power. Only through the independent mobilization of the working class on a socialist program can humanity defend itself against the barbarism that Trump and his oligarchic backers represent. For these articles and more, visit the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been Jenny Campbell for the World Socialist website.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.